Jack Flack to Lady Ace. Jack Flack to Lady Ace. Come in, Lady Ace. Lady Ace. Steve. Steve.
Sean, I told you, man. I'm not Lady Ace. I'm not playing this.
Come on, man. No one... Dor won't do it either. I'm out of here.
This is embarrassing.
Hello and welcome to Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 4. Tonight we're going to review the 1984 film Cloak and Dagger. I'm going to go around. Let me say something first. I apologize to any listeners that may have got a double download of the first three episodes. This past weekend I went ahead and got off of Blogger and I've got a WordPress site going now. So I had to move everything over, which meant... I didn't want to import my Blogger because I was having issues. So everyone got a double download. So I apologize for that, but that should be the end of it. With that being said, tonight, as usual, I got my buddy Steve Cherubino here with me tonight.
What's up, Sean? How's it going?
It is. It's going good. We're down one man tonight. Dor's sick, and... I have three kids. He has two kids. So I know how it goes with all these ickies that come home from school all the time. We're not out of that time of the year yet. So he will hopefully be back next week with us. But for tonight, you and I are going to have to handle it. But I think we can, I think we'll be okay.
Yes. He will be missed, though.
Yeah. He will be missed. And we may even bring him up. We may even bring him up throughout the show. About, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So we'll just roll with it. Let me also just say I've gotten some feedback from a couple of listeners. Basically, this show is just going to be us talking about 70s and 80s movies, probably more so 80s movies. And they're not even always going to be movies that we loved. They may be movies that maybe Steve likes and Dor and I don't like, or I liked and these two
didn't. Top Gun?
Top Gun. I think I said we each get one movie that we can deny. And I think that was my movie that I denied. So listeners won't have to worry about hearing Top Gun episode. But yeah, that's pretty much the gist. It's just, let's be honest, it's an excuse for us to hang out again once a week. We already do our other show. It's another day we get to hang out. And for me, you know, my wife doesn't really like these movies. You know, she's seen them, some of them when she was a kid, and that's good enough for her. She's more into the horror genre of movies. So it's an excuse for me where I'm like, look, I got to watch this movie again. You know,
you're like, it's my job. I have to do it.
Yeah. It's, you know, priorities, hon. You know, I got, you know, okay, I'll do take out the trash, but then I'm going to watch Cloak and Dagger after. So, and plus then I get to introduce these to my kids too, you know, and sometimes that's kind of, you know, hard to do with old stuff. They don't really always want to, you know.
How have you been success-wise with that so far?
Cloak and Dagger, I've been okay. I got them to watch it a couple months ago. I really honestly forced them to watch it. I kind of gathered everybody in. And
that's one way to make them like it.
Yeah, well, you know, I really felt strong. I thought, man, I loved this as a kid. And I probably saw it around my oldest son. He's going to be 11 Wednesday. And that's pretty much, that's like the age I was at when I saw it. And he was the one who put up the biggest fight about watching it.
I wonder why.
I think he was afraid it was going to be a lot of like, shooting and just, you know, I think he thought it was going to be like worse. You know what I mean? Like it was,
well, from the name of it. Yeah. You could think it would be violent.
Yeah. And so he was, you know, he's not really into that kind of stuff, which is good.
Sure.
But he watched it and, I watched it again, last weekend and my youngest, he kind of likes it. And then my oldest came in and watched it, my daughter, but so it kind of went over well with that. Private Eyes, my oldest wanted nothing to do with it. He was just like, yeah, I no. But I think, I don't know if I talked about this with you guys before, Clue, you know, I tried watching Clue with my oldest son, and he did not like it at all. To him, it was, I don't know if you remember, do you remember Clue, the movie?
Yeah, it was kind of creepy, weird.
Yeah, he was like, Dad, I'm like, okay, you don't, you know, I'm not going to force him to watch it.
Like, yeah, some movies, like for Private Eyes, I don't know if that holds up. Like, if I saw that for the first time at my age now, I don't know what I would make of it, you know? The only reason I really enjoyed it when you guys did that show is the childhood sentimental value.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the cool thing about this podcast. You know, you and I talked about this, you know, you kind of realize things watching it now. You see it, I mean, obviously we're older, so you see it from a different set of eyes. You know, you kind of interpret things, catch things that you didn't really catch when you saw it as a kid. So
yeah, that's what I am enjoying most about this, is watching it as an adult with like an adult perspective, and just I'm catching many more things, just because mainly in the language and the dialogue that I missed as a kid.
Yeah. Well, this movie specifically, and I have to state, I love this movie as a kid. I love this movie now. But I am a little more critical of it this time. I saw things, and not critical in a way where I'm like, this movie sucks. Why? Just like, okay, as an adult watching it, if I were to take my kids to the movies to see it, and I never saw it before, I may be sitting there going, really? This, you know what I mean? So
yes.
Just kind of a disclaimer. Yes, I may pick at it a little bit, but I really seriously love this movie. I mean,
I don't think anybody will hate you for picking at it.
No, I don't think so either.
I will too.
Oh, you'll pick at it?
Yeah, I don't mind picking at anything. Even Door.
Yeah. And that's the thing with this whole podcast idea, man. We don't have to. We don't have to even like the movies we liked before. It's just like, hey, and we liked them then, but how do we feel about them now? So
yeah.
But with that said, with our little disclaimers out there and everything, let me get a little sip of water here and we will move on. So why don't we just, we're just going to kind of go through the entire movie, kind of float through the scenes and point out certain things about it. But the main thing I liked about this when it started, I really, really did enjoy, the way it did open, it kind of opens up in this, you're kind of watching like, what is going on? You know, this guy's flying out of the sky and he's a superhero and everything. And it's, you're introduced instantly to Jack Flack, who is a main character in the movie, but he's not real. You know, he turns out, you find out this little intro scene, you find out that it's actually the main character, Davey, playing a role-playing game, you know, with dice, you know, kind of like D&D-ish. But you get in, that's how you get introduced to this movie.
And you would think, I would think, after watching the first 5 minutes, the movie's going to go in like one direction where it's going to be all about Jack Flack. And that's the kind of movie it's going to be, you know, taking place in foreign lands and stuff until those dice come rolling in, and then it's a completely whole different movie.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of think it's going to be like a kind of like spoofy, you know, could I even say kind of like, what's the movie?
Top Secret.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of has that feel to it.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so then we find out that it's actually just Davey playing the role-playing game, which I got to say, when I saw those dice come in, I mean, that just reminded me of playing D&D. So I was like, yes, we got multi-sided dice. I was so psyched about that, but
yes. Yeah, you know, my memories of D&D weren't so fond. I did play it, but the Dungeon Master kicked me out. He banned me for life. I was such a pain in the butt, and I was more about trying to make him wrong than actually have fun with the game. And
that's so what I say. Were you like, not? Did you not take it serious, or
yeah,
you took it too serious?
I just kept everything he said. I would be against him. I was kind of a. I wasn't a really nice kid.
How old were you? About. God,
this was high school.
All right.
Freshman? Middle school? Freshman?
See, I played probably... Well, I played with my brother. He's a couple years old. He's about 3 years older. And the neighbor kids that are his age. And they actually made me wait a year. excuse me, they made me wait about a year before I could play. I just got to sit and watch them. And even that was awesome. You know, we would sit in my neighbor's basement and in the wintertime, and they had a wood burner down there, and my brother and a couple guys would play, and I would have to watch. So I kind of learn the ropes, I guess. And
when that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So when they finally did let me kind of jump in, they were starting to kind of get out of it. It wasn't as big of a deal to them, but I was right. Like, I can get to play. So I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't have respect. Like, they, it looked like they made you have respect for the game. I didn't respect my Dungeon Master, so.
Yeah.
But anyway, I at least I got the whole thing with the dice. The understanding was there.
Right. So, yeah, then so we find out that's Davey. He's the main character of this. He's probably like, what, I don't even know, maybe like, say, like a 12-year-old boy. And we get some character development there where we meet him, his best friend, I would say, Kim. Little girl is his age, and then Morris, because they're actually in the they're in like a game store, but not a game store like you would think now, where you go to the mall and it's the, you know, GameStop or whatever it is.
Yeah, this store had character.
It had a lot of character, man. This, I mean, you had everything in there. You had D&D books. I saw, you know, you could see because it was a pretty big store, and they have D&D books. And I noticed the Monster Manual. I was like, oh, yes. Yahtzee, a box for Yahtzee that was
yeah.
there.
It was a kind of store where you could go in and like find something unexpected. That's awesome. Whereas the game stores now, they're all kind of like the same. Cookie cutter, splat, everything's all like that's what you get. But this was like you could find some treasures kind of in that store. Plus, it was all about video games. Atari was definitely a sponsor for this movie because there was Atari logos and boxes everywhere.
Yep, the 5200, and I think, wasn't there the Atari computer or something?
Yep, you use the Atari computer and 5200. That was the game system they were definitely spotlighting. And after listening to the episode of The Retroist, which I don't know if you're going to bring that up or when you're going to bring that up, but I definitely learned more about how Atari was linked to this movie.
Yeah, well, since you did bring it up, I'll just kind of touch on that. The Retroist, anybody, if you're into stuff like this, old 80s movies or even TV shows, toys, stuff like that, check out the Retroist podcast, man. He does like a 20 to 30 minute podcast where he gives a lot of information on certain things. And he did a Cloak and Dagger episode where, he kind of describes, tells you more in depth about the backgrounds of the movie, actors in the movie. And he has a couple spots where another podcast, You Don't Know Flack, a guy, Rob O'Hara, you should check out his podcast. He does a segment sometimes in the Retroist called, drawing a blank now, but basically he gives the technical overview. So he gets in and kind of tells you about the game, because we find out that this was never, we talked about this before, like it was never actually a game, Cloak and Dagger for the 5200. So he kind of goes into that and says it was an arcade game. But yeah, definitely check out the Retroist podcast, retroist.com. You'll get a lot of good stuff there. I really enjoy his podcast.
Remember, folks, your kids won't know a thing about Atari or the Smurfs unless you educate them. So have them listen to the Retroist podcast weekly at retroist.com. You'll be glad you did.
With that being said, though, so we meet these characters, and it's obvious that they hang out there quite a bit. Like, they are friendly with Morris. It kind of seems like they're in the back rumors in an area where probably not most people are. And they're playing a game. He's playing his video game. Morris is playing a video game of something.
Now, he's designing a game, isn't he?
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, he's making a game.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah, because he is kind of jotting things down, isn't he? I noticed that. I thought he was just kind of like taking notes on a game or something. I didn't even notice if he was designing.
Maybe. Maybe I took it out of context. He said he wants to finish his game, and for some reason I thought he was making a game.
Yeah, you could be right.
I got to see that again.
Yeah, any excuse to watch it over again. But so Davey's really into Cloak and Dagger. So Cloak and Dagger is not only the role-playing game, but in this movie, it's Cloak and Dagger is an Atari 5200 game. So those are the two main things of Cloak and Dagger that kind of play a big role in this movie.
I had, dude, I'm sorry.
No.
I had a lot of connection with that because I had on a 5200, I think, at the time of this movie. And I really liked my 5200. Nobody else had one. It wasn't hugely popular, but it was this monolithic giant game control or, you know, game system with these huge cartridges. And I remember when I watched this movie, they were playing Cloak and Dagger, and he was actually putting the cartridge in and playing it. And I'm like, where is this game? I want this game. And I don't know what was cooler, the fact that it never came out because it only existed as an arcade game, or that it should have came out and then we all would have got a chance to play it. I don't know what would have been cooler.
Yeah. See, I didn't have a 5200. We had the 2600, but I never had the 5200. But that had like the big controller, right?
The 5200. Yeah, the controller had like a numeric keypad and these rubber buttons on the side that just broke all the time. The controllers weren't very good. They weren't like the 2600 controllers where you could literally throw them at a wall.
Those things were awesome.
They were indestructible.
We used to use the 2600 controllers, I believe, on our Commodore 64. I'm pretty sure we used to plug them into that and play like track and field, I think. My brother had a Commodore 64, but we used to actually pull off the rubber boot off the controller so you could get that thing going a lot quicker. There's less resistance in that.
I hated them, man. My hands were always sore after using them things.
Yeah.
Like you know, like between two fingers was like, there's no skin left.
Yeah, because you would get that thing going. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I even seen people where they would like kind of hold it and hold the joystick and kind of just slap the base of it. Or, you know what I mean?
Like
like you're shaking a stick or something.
Right.
Anything so you could get it going faster, like in track and field and stuff. But yeah, I never had one and didn't know anybody that had a 5200. I'll be quite honest. I've never seen one other than pictures.
I have a motherboard of one sitting in my closet here. I was going to make it into a handheld unit because I've done that with Nintendo systems, NES systems.
Uh-huh.
Take the motherboard out, buy a 7-inch screen and make a handheld unit. I bought a book from a guy named Ben Heckendorn. And I think he's on Revision 3 now with his own show, but he would teach you how to hack video game systems. So I did it with the NES, and I'm like, it would be cool to do that with the 5200, except the 5200 motherboard is the size of like a pizza box. So it would be the biggest handheld system you've ever seen. But I still have it there. It's still in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
It's a cool system. It's a real cool system.
Well, that's cool. Well, so we'll move on now. I do need to touch on the fact that Davey finds some walkie-talkies there because they do play a major part in this movie down the road. They find some walkie-talkies and they start talking. And Morris basically is like, look, if you want an adventure, he's going to send him on an adventure or a mission, you know, and this kind of starts snowballing what's going to happen. And I thought it was funny. He's going to send him to get some catalogs at Textronix. And Davey, you know, this part, Davey finds it kind of, he's like, you know, he kind of find it boring, but so he throws in Twinkies with a hidden message in them, you know.
Which was boring until Morris said there's a hidden message in them.
Right, yeah. But I would have thought the other way, like, I would have thought getting catalogs, he could have, like, played that up as, like, there's secret, you know, documents in there that you have to get, so.
Yeah, good point. Plus, I would have been all into the catalogs.
Yeah. So they go over to Textronix, and two major things happen here. For one, this is when we finally meet Jack Flack for the first time. Not inside the game, but actually as Davey's, hero, imaginary friend, I guess you would say, his companion, right? Which obviously nobody else can see. And they have a conversation in the hallway. So it's kind of cool. You get the nice interaction with those two in the stairwell.
And their relationship kind of is Jack Flack is just giving Davey advice on how to play the game of Cloak and Dagger, right? And win.
Yeah, exactly. You know, don't trust anybody and, you know, being on missions by yourself. He's a great character. I love Jack Flack, man. He's very cool. But it's Dabney Coleman, and we've talked about my love for Dabney Coleman. Dorf, same thing. He feels the same way about him. He's just a cool dude. But after we meet Jack Flack, this is when the story really gets going. Davey kind of oversees, like, some guys in a reflection, right, of a floor above them, the way he's looking out the window. Anyways, a guy comes storming out, and this is when Davey gets the actual – he gives Davey a cloak and dagger cartridge, and this kind of snowballs the whole movie because he's been shot, and these guys come out, and they start shooting at him, you know, and –
they just start shooting at Davey. See, this is, this part to me was a little bit like, okay. They don't know. I don't think they absolutely knew Davey had the cartridge yet, did they? I guess they did. I mean,
I think they saw him hand off.
Okay, they saw it hand, and they saw a hand off.
Yeah.
You know, would you shoot the kid right away like that? I mean, well, you know, these, you know, bad guys, spies or whatever, they do a couple not too smart things throughout the movie. So I guess I can't really fault them just for this.
Yeah, I would
but I think it was a little too premature to shoot Davey right in the stairwell there.
Yeah. Maybe try to grab him. I don't know what would have actually been the good answer for them, what they should do. They're a horrible shot. I mean, he was standing right there and the guy basically gave him the tape and told him some numbers to remember. And you know what I noticed? They shoot the guy again, and the guy dies. They hand him the tape, and he takes off running down the stairwell. But you know what I did notice this time that I never noticed before? When they shoot him for the last time, and the guy goes over the stairwell and plummets down, I think, 7 floors, he, like, smacks his head on the railing.
He does?
Yeah, I never noticed it before. But, he as he falls, like, two floors down, he smacks his head.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, it was messed up, man. I was like, oh, I never noticed that in the, like, 20 times I've seen this movie.
Huh.
Which then it's like, you know, because Davey gets out of there. He hightails it out of there. And, you know, he goes to get help by security. They all check on it because he's yelling that there's been a murder and everything. And
he has evidence. The body is at the bottom of the stairwell, right?
You would think. And that was another one. I'm like, all right. And now it really made, because I used to think, okay, they got the body out of there within, like, what, 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
3 minutes of Davey getting down and calling for help. But then I thought, okay, he smacks his head on the way down. There's got to be some serious bloods flying 7 floors down.
I know, man.
So these guys are really kind of goony, and you're right. I would say almost just about everything they do in this movie trying to get him is just like...
pathetic.
Yes, but they're a good cleanup crew because there's nothing there's nothing left behind, and the cops come and they take Davey, and we find out that he's been, like, interrogated by the police, you know, for hours, you know, and they take him home to his dad. And another thing I noticed at this part was, like, you know, Kim's with him at this whole time. His little friend Kim is with him. And when they take him home, I hear that she says, well, I'm going to get going now, because they're walking Davey and her up to Davey's door. And the cop says, you're going to be okay? And she's like, yeah, I got a key. He goes, okay. Like, that part,
what's wrong with that?
Because they've been in the police station probably for hours. I think the cop even says that. I mean, you're not going to walk her home to her parents. You're just going to be like, all right, go ahead, little girl. I'm going to take him home. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know why I didn't think that was a big deal? I thought she lived next door.
I think she did. But I don't know. I just thought they would have maybe had a policeman walk her over and explain where she was all day, you know?
I don't know, man. Like, I know some kids in my neighborhood. I probably couldn't get away with it, but I could kind of close to get away with, like, coming home when it was dark. I don't know if I was as young as Kim, but I had a key. You just go ahead in. Walk in your house.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was kind of like that, too. I'm just saying, if you're at the police station all day and the police are bringing you home, I think maybe they'd escort her. But I know, for movie's sake, they focusing on Davey. But things were different back then, too. They're very different back then. I mean, there was a lot more leniency with kids, you know.
That's the other thing, too. Like, I don't have kids, so I'm thinking, like, it's still like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm wrong.
It's not. I mean, I'm very overprotective. I know I am. My wife is the one who tries to go, come on, we got to give him a little space, you know, let him, you know, ride to the bus stop on his bike and back, which is down the street and around the corner. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should just get in the car and follow him and he won't see me. but yeah, it's definitely different times. So, but they do, they take him home and, you know, that's when we meet Dabney Coleman and we find out like Jack Flack, Dabney Coleman, they're, you know, the same actor, obviously, but they're the same. He, his image of Jack Flack is his father. Just a little different, subtle differences. You know, his mustache is definitely different than his father's.
Yeah. And Dorr did remark when we talked about this, that Dabney Coleman to him looked better there than any role he's ever seen him.
Oh yeah, he looked good, and his father, he looked good, but he definitely had that, you know, weathered look to him. We find out here that, you know, Davy's dad is a single father. His mother, we find out his mother's passed away, so there's a lot of strain, you know, and he kind of explains that to the policeman that they've been going through a lot of stuff, and
it must have happened recently, right?
Yeah, it seems fairly fresh, you know, that they're still trying to work their way through this. So there's some leniency, you know, there with the police and everything. But, you know, you had said before when we talked about it, his dad is not a jerk. He's doing what he's got to do, being a single dad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was still grieving and doing the best that he could. And, you know, when he was trying to calm Davy down and talk to his kid, he was doing the best that he could caring-wise, you know what I mean? He wasn't just being a straight-up jerk.
Right.
So I respected him for that. And I especially like the part about when he was trying to explain to Davy about a hero and that a hero isn't always like somebody like Jack Flack, but it's, you know, like what a dad actually, things that dads normally do, like putting bikes together and, you know, going to work and putting food on the table. That's being a hero.
Right.
I thought that was pretty cool.
It was really good. It was touching, you know. Davey, you know, he doesn't really get it, but he's a kid, you know, because yeah. He tells his dad he hates him at one point because, you know, he's trying to play this game for his dad to unlock it, to show him that there's something on this tape. There's a reason why he was given this tape, you know, and his dad gives him a little chance to, okay, you know, he'll entertain him, play the game of cloak and dagger. But he's just really entertaining his son. And after he plays a little bit, he's like, you know, and I think this is the part that really bothered you was when his dad just kind of turns it off, turns the TV off and says, all right, let's go.
It bothered me because that didn't turn the game system off. You could turn a TV off. The Atari's still on.
Right.
Davy had to pull one knob and he was back in business.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what bothered me. And I don't like that in any movie where they turn off video games by just turning off the TV. That's not turning off the game. You want to end that game. You hit the power button.
Yeah. Well, you know, him telling his dad he hated him, that definitely bothered me. That made me sad. I didn't like that because, you know, kids do that. My youngest does it sometimes. And it, you know, I try to just not react because, you know, it's just a kid being a kid saying hurtful things. Kids do that. We've all done it. I, you know, I did it when I was a kid.
Me too.
So now we got the feeling for his father. He feels, and, you know, Jack Flack pops in this scene as well, and he's kind of just telling like Davey, like, look, we don't need this guy. He's not going to believe you, you know. So he's got Jack Flack. That's his father figure, I guess, because he feels that too. Like he feels like his dad doesn't believe him, you know.
And Jack Flack is very influential in making Davey feel a little worse about his dad if he would without Jack Flack. Like Jack Flack is very, you know, disparaging of Davy's father. He is like, you know, we don't need this joke. This guy's a joker. You know, we're better off without him. So if Davy does believe that, then sucks for Davy's dad.
It definitely, yeah. He's got that working against him.
Yeah.
They get a phone call too because, like I said, he dropped his softball at Textronic, the building Textronic, and he had dropped his softball, and one of the guys had found it. Dr. Rice had found a ball and kept it. So they end up calling the house, and so they know where he lives. They talk to Davey briefly, and, you know, and it just like, you know, in a movie, he gives a phone to his dad, and they, you know, they hang up on him. So they know where he lives. And
what did they say on the phone? They're coming to get him?
Now you're putting me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
I should know this.
I don't know either. Yeah,
they basically ask if this is Davey Osborne. He says yes, and he says good. Right. And I think he says, you have something we want or something like that. And
gotcha.
He kind of panics. He's, you know, it's funny because the whole time he's, I think he's covering the phone, but he's like, dad, it's them. It's the spies. The guys want to try and kill me or whatever. Yeah. And they don't hang up until his dad picks up the phone. Then they hang up. Like,
exactly.
I think I would have killed that line when I hear the kid yelling for his dad.
Exactly. So, I know. I thought the same thing.
But, you know, as a kid watching it, you don't pick these things out. You know, these are all things I notice now being an adult watching them. Still love the movie. Got to throw that in there. Still got my Cloak and Dagger love. But so that all plays into effect. You know, the next morning, Dave's dad's leaving for work. And, you know, after his dad's gone, these guys are obviously watching the house. Because, like, a little bit later, a couple minutes later or something, he's in the house. And that's when we meet Rice again that you see at Textronix. And the two guys that he sees that are shooting at him. Haverman and Alvarez, they basically break into
Iron Fist Haverman.
Yeah, why do you say that?
Because he just punches through everything in this movie without a scratch. It's like he has an iron fist. He, like, when he comes through into the house, he just punches through the front door, right?
Yeah. He like, I think he actually kind of like shoulders through the back door. Because the ball comes through the front window.
Right. That's right.
But he punches, because when he comes, because Davey's, you know, hey, I'm going to get out the back door. And when he goes up to his bedroom and shuts it, that's when he punches through.
Okay. He punched the bedroom door.
Through the wooden door like it was nothing. I was just like, wow, that guy is he's something else.
I was also a little surprised maybe it's just Davey's quote in military training from Jack Flack. He handled the situation quite well. It was pretty calm. I think I would have pissed my pants and hid under my bed.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I think any kid would, normally.
You're right.
I know I would have done the same thing. Probably would have screamed a little bit through the house, maybe.
Yeah, right.
But what I wouldn't do is I probably wouldn't go to the video game store to tell Morris about the tape. And that's what Davey does. You know, he's going there to, because Morris is like his... You know, his hookup for computers and everything. And he says, you know, he's a genius. So he wants to see if he can hack whatever. They don't know what's so special about this tape. You know, he gives it to him. And this is when I thought of you, because he gives him the tape and Morris opens it up. I think it was like one screw, and he's like all amazed that because there's extra wires and a chip in there. And he's commenting on the soldering of it.
Yeah, he's like, look at these connections. And, I didn't think you could tell a super professional-looking job from soldering connections. I think there's some pretty capable soldering people out there who aren't, like, highly trained criminals. So
yeah. I mean, I'm not good at soldering, but I probably could have tacked it on in that situation. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to fit into some small area. I mean, it was just a tape. It's wide open.
Yeah.
But it adds to the movie and the suspense of it. Like, ooh, we're dealing with some really high-tech spies here that put spy stuff in video games.
And I got to give Davey props for the actions he does make here, because he's more concerned about carrying out this mission of getting this tape to the FBI than his life, to be honest.
Yeah.
So he's into the game.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, Flack pushing him with it as well. But you're right. He himself, he's just thinking that he's got to get this mission done, take care of what needs to be done to find out what's going on and stop these guys. He's not. I mean, he could very easily have done what you or I would have done and ran to the police.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so they're looking at it, and then I think Kimmy actually kind of. She calls him on the walkie-talkie, and lo and behold, she went to the house. She went to his house. So we find out now Rice gets on the walkie-talkie, and they've got her. And he pretty much tells him, like, look, you got something we want. We have something you want. So he tells him to meet him at the Japanese Sunken Gardens?
Yeah.
Right? At noon or something. So we moved to the Sunken Gardens. Davey goes there, and he's going to make the trade because he wants to, you know, he wants to save his friend. And I think he wants to save the tape as well. But, well, let me back up. He doesn't even take the right tape. That's a big deal, because why doesn't he take the tape, Steve? the original. Well,
Jack Flack says, look, man, there's a whole, at Morris's shop, there's all these Cloak and Dagger cartridges there. Why don't you just take a fake one and, you know, use that as the real one? And so Davey listens to him.
Yeah, so he's going to, you know, he's going to not only save his friend, but con and these guys.
Yeah, he's going to con them, and he's going to leave the original with Morris, who's going to figure out what the plans are on the tape. It was a good, I think it was a sound plan.
Yeah, it definitely was a good move. And it almost works out. I mean, things kind of go a little awry at the Sunken Gardens. You know, we meet these guys again. So they're hanging a girl off a cliff. That happens all the time, right? There's nobody there, right?
Nobody's
going
to
notice him hanging.
It was only
girl.
In the middle of the day.
Right, yeah.
And she wasn't screaming or anything.
I don't think she was, actually, though.
She wasn't. No, she wasn't. But she like, I'm just saying, why not?
Yeah. She's just like, Davey, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But this was one of my favorite scenes, actually, in the movie. When he does make the trade, he plays it off so pro, you know? Rice is coming after him, or Rice is approaching him. Davey stays calm. He puts the tape on the ground. You know, Rice does approach him. And Davey makes sure they let Kim go before he gives him the cartridge. That was cool. And then knowing that, you know, Rice then takes the tape and then lunges for Davey to try to kill him or whatever. Davey knew that was going to happen. Apparently he already had his water pistol like preloaded and like pointing it at him. And he was very convincing in making Rice think that he was going to shoot him with a real gun. And
he was confident. He was showing a lot of confidence in that. He wasn't showing to be a scared little kid.
Right. He's showing a lot of confidence. I love the way he acted in that part. He just did it right with all his movements and things he said. And he was probing Rice for more information about what's on the tape. And when he's pointed the gun at him, I'm like, man, if I was Rice, I would think that kid's going to shoot me too.
Yeah. And especially because now they don't have, you know, back then they didn't have the little orange knobs. You know, you couldn't pull that off. He wouldn't be able to pull that off now. You have to have like little orange knobs on all the toy guns and everything. Right. So, that was very cool. And I think this is the scene that really made me think, that Henry Thomas was a good actor. He really was a good actor. there's some discrepancies in the host, and Dor's not here to defend himself.
I'm just going to say, I think that Henry Thomas is an awesome actor too.
Yeah, he did really well in this movie. And that was one of those things I noticed now. You know, as a kid, you're not really thinking that way. You're so engulfed in the movie. But now, yeah, I just remember rewatching, go, man, this kid is really he's a really good actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's kind of the point where I think that's the point where I put it in my notes that that was one of the things I really liked about the movie was his acting.
Yeah. I mean, if Kim, she wasn't a major role in it, so.
But like you said before, you know, like before we did the show, her bad acting didn't really affect the movie that much. It almost wasn't a problem. You know what I mean? It was she was still had enough personality that you liked her.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think it affected it at all. But yeah, he's definitely a good actor. And but from here, it's like we get a couple of different steps of mishaps for these guys. Because I would chalk this one up as one win for Davey right now. And you know, because they hightail it out of there.
Can I say something about this?
Yes, go right ahead.
Well, first of all, it was cool that Davey shot Rice in the eye with the blood, the red ink, because that bought him a couple seconds to run away. Now he's running away. He meets up with Kim, and they start running out of there. And then you have the typical chase scene in movies, I think in this time period, this era, and maybe they still do it now, I don't even know, where they're running away from whoever's chasing them, and the pursuer, the bad guys, get within feet of catching them, and then they switch to another camera shot where the chase is continuing, and for some unknown reason, the bad guys are 20 feet behind them again, and then again, catch up to them, almost ready to get them, and then they cut to another camera scene where they're another 20 feet behind them. I don't like, you know, I could take some unrealistic things in movies, but when you do that enough, that takes me out of the movie, and they did it big time.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't really notice it that much.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah. Well, I was more, what really struck me now watching it, cause they get on the bus and, of course the van is following them. But while Haverman and Alvarez are in a van, Rice is going somewhere else cause he has the tape, which he flips it over when Davey gives it to him after he shoots him in the eye with the fake blood and sees that it's got a sticker on it for the mall. So he knows it's not the real tape. And what got me was, so he's calling Alvarez on this giant phone in the van, and he's telling him, basically, we don't need the kid, dispose of the kid, I'm going to get the real tape. And I was kind of like, all right, how does he know, you know, okay, you were just bamboozled by this kid with a fake tape, but how do you know that that tape is at the mall where he, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
How do you know?
But that's something I missed too. And it was only after you told me that I kind of kicked myself and be like, yeah, that's. I thought that was a perfectly fine move by Rice, but I guess it wasn't.
Yeah, because he didn't know it could have been. I mean, Davey had a backpack and everything, so I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of strange. But we then go from there. They get, you know, Davey gets off the bus, and again, of course, they try to cut him. They cut right in front of the bus as Davey's jumping off. To get out of there because he tells the bus driver he's sick, he won't let him off. And, you know, they try to run over the kid pretty much, right? And I was just like, oh, all right, there's another, like...
Public.
Yeah, there's, like so many people because they're at the, like, at the River Tours or something. Like, it's called the River Tours. So there's, you know, there are people there. And
one thing I liked about that part is how fast Davey was running. I mean, he was, like, in a full sprint for real. It wasn't, like, fake running.
Yeah, I think he did, like, I don't even think the bus completely stopped, did it?
No, he jumped off.
He kind of jumped off and did a run right from that.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was a couple scenes in this movie where I was expecting a stuntman, and there wasn't.
Yeah, a little stunt boy.
Yeah, stunt boy.
You know, and then we got another scene here. This is the River Tours. And Flack even tells him, like, you're in public. They're not going to do anything to you here. You know?
And then what do?
They shoot at him.
Shoot at him.
They're shooting at him in public, but nobody sees it.
Yeah. They have silencers on the guns.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he's there and he goes on the River Tour. He goes on the little, you know, they got like a, it's like a, what, like a pontoon type of boat or something. It's like a small flat boat. And, you know, we have a little chaos on the boat because they follow him on the boat. And, you know, Davey's kind of moving around the boat to try and get away from him. And I love that Haverman, is told by Alvarez to cause a distraction.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think he does a good job. Why do you love that? I think he did a good job.
Because to me, as Davey's bouncing around the boat to get away from them, and Alvarez is following him and smiling at him, you know that the character that Haverman is, you know, he's sitting there going, oh, scratching his head going, all right, what can I do? You know, right. And his idea that we find out is like to say there's a fire on the boat. Or on the engine, you know,
which worked.
It did work, but it made everyone everyone's like jumping all over the place. Well, Davey meets an older couple on the boat. We should point that out.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you this: so you're on this riverboat, right? You and your girl, and you're making out in front of everybody, right?
Right.
And this guy comes off and tells you to move. And you say, why? And he says, because I said so. Are you going to just let this dude?
It depends.
On who he is?
Yeah, it depends. The look, how crazy. I would look in his eye and see how crazy the guy is. But, and if he did say move, I would move. But if he was crazy enough to make me move, I wouldn't let him sit next to my girlfriend. Okay, I'd take her with me.
Okay. That's kind of, because they just are like, okay. Sit down.
And he gets up and he sits right next to her girlfriend.
Yeah. Just, girlfriend. I was like, wow. Like you said, at least move the two of yous or something.
Yeah.
And we meet this older couple. Davey meets this older couple and he kind of tells him, like, this dude's trying to kill me. And she says, I don't think so. I think they're, and exactly what I'm thinking, he looks like a pervert to me.
Right.
Because he's following around this boat and every time he sits and looks at him, he just gives him like this really creepy smile.
He does. I'll give you that this time.
And I'm like, man, he just looks like a perv, this guy.
Yes.
But
I do see, because we had a little discussion about that before, and I'm like, oh, he's just trying to maintain cover in public, that he's not trying to kill Davey. But yeah, you're right. To an observer, that would be definitely perv material.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, the old couple are the only ones who even notice it. You know, so they're kind of consoling Davey until, Haverman, the light bulb goes off in Haverman's head and he's like, fire, and the whole bus boat kind of gets all crazy. And even the old couple, you see, because it kind of gives you a top view shot. Like everyone's just kind of trying to get off this. I don't know where they're going. They're actually kind of walking towards the engine. Where the fire is, right. And yep. So that
bad move.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. But Davey ends up getting off the boat, just missing being stabbed by Alvarez on the boat as well. Kind of lunges at him.
I don't know how Alvarez would explain that if he actually did get Davey.
Yeah.
Where everybody calms down after they're seeing it's not a fire.
And there's a kid just bleeding everywhere. Like, what? Yeah, you're right. But as a kid viewing this movie,
yeah, I know.
Didn't care. You're just like, go, right. Davey, go, run.
And then Dorr pointed out he made a nice Frogger move off the boat onto another boat and then back onto land, which I agree with. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. And while all this is going on, Rice said he was going to get the tape. So he heads over to see Morris. So we get a cut scene to that, and Morris actually ends up breaking the code. And I want to say it was like 1 million, was it 1,329 was the number.
I'm not 100% sure.
That he kind of has to get to unlock. And that's when he unlocks the plans for what would basically be like a stealth bomber.
Right.
So
which I thought was cool when I watched it, even this time. I thought it was neat that he broke the code and the Atari 5200 is showing these plans for a stealth or invisible bomber.
Yeah, the invisible bomber. Exactly. Yeah. That was really cool. Just too bad for Morris because he gets popped off by Rice. Rice wants his tape. He's not even asking for it anymore. He's just, sorry.
Shooting first.
Or maybe it was because Morris was kind of rude and he's like, I'll be right there.
Yeah.
And then he came in. He's like, I said I'll be right there.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just like, can you talk to me like that? But so he gets his tape
and shoots a nice the bullet hole through the monitor is exactly in the center of the monitor. I got to give Rice props for that one.
Yeah.
I'm taking it he destroyed that system just so nobody else would get the plans for the invisible bomber.
Well, I don't think they would because if it's on the
tape.
The carpet, the tape, I call it the cartridge. But yeah, it's on the cartridge, so it's not like it's on a hard drive or anything.
Right.
I thought they were just trying to imply that, I don't know.
Screw with us.
Did it shoot him in the eye or something?
They didn't show Morris at that point.
Well, because we see him after. I want to think he got shot in the face or something, and maybe it's just
really?
Like. Really? It's just because Davey goes there and he finds Kim, and she's already there and she's upset. And she,
meets up with Kim, right?
And she, she knows. He's dead and everything, and he's trying to play it off like he's not. So I think it's more to get that feel of, if she just goes there and he's not there, well, maybe he's out to lunch getting Twinkies or something, But
he likes his Twinkies.
He does like his Twinkies, and he wants his money, his, 50 cents if they don't give him his Twinkies.
I think that's what the retro said, too. He definitely had a Twinkie joke in there, yeah.
Yeah, so... this is when Davey and Kim split again. I think he tells her, you need to go get help. We need an adult, which you notice he doesn't say his dad because to him, his dad's not going to help. He doesn't believe him with anything.
Doesn't believe him.
Right? And he wants to go stop Rice because he knows now that Rice has the cartridge. So, again, he's continuing with the mission.
I know, man. He's got a set of cojones on him. I tell you that. Going after Rice, that's crazy for a kid.
Yeah.
Dedicated.
I mean, he doesn't know what he's going to do, but he's gonna go after him, which he finds out he's like in a meeting or something. And so he goes to his car in the garage with Flack, and he's there with Jack Flack. And, this is when they find Morris, right? They find Morris in the trunk.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it was crazy that, you know, for Davey to go and continue to pursue Rice, he had to jump in the trunk with dead Morris. That, again, is hardcore. I mean, that's your dead friend.
Yeah.
In the trunk. So props for Davey for following through.
Yeah, and he takes off. Rice takes off.
Would you do that, Sean? Would you get in the trunk with your dead friend?
I wouldn't have done any of this, Steve. I would not have done any of this. I probably would have went to the cops, maybe went in a corner and sucked on my thumb for a little while and rocked and cried. There's no way I would have done all this, man.
I would have definitely yelled mommy a couple times. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah, that's great. The kid definitely, he's like you said, he's got some cojones in this movie. And then Rice comes and he's stuck in the trunk. He doesn't know he's in there, but he starts driving off. And it was funny because Morris kind of rolls with the car and he's got a call for Jack Flack or Agent X to help him to get up. And when he kind of appears, he's like, there's not enough room for two people or something. Like he kind of makes a joke about it. Jack Flack does that. There's not that much room in there to begin with.
Right.
But, they get him off. And then we get to
the Alamo.
The Alamo. And Davey overhears them. Or did he overhear them talking in the garage, I think, actually, right?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. As we were talking, I'm trying to remember how he knows what the plan is. But I do know that when they get to the Alamo, the trunk was never fully closed, so he was able to pull it up and listen to them when they finally got to the Alamo.
Yeah, when they got to the Alamo. Because, yeah, right. Rice gets it goes to the car, doesn't notice the trunk because it's only ajarred a little bit. It's not open up real wide. And he just goes. And you're right. Then he explains to Alvarez and Haverman that this is the drop-off spot.
Right.
You know, these spies are working with some other spies to make a drop-off and get paid. They're kind of the middlemen spies, I guess you'd say.
And this is the point where we find out that one of the other spies only has two fingers.
Yeah, missing two fingers.
Missing two fingers.
But other than that, he doesn't know anything. You know, so, which made a lot of sense. You know, spies doing drop-offs, not knowing. And, you know, the less you know, if someone gets caught, the least amount of damage.
It's true. Except their plan, that's smart. Except their plan for the drop-off wasn't that bright.
Yeah, at the Alamo.
In the middle of the Alamo.
Yeah, not the 7-Eleven, you know, behind the dumpster or something like that. Yeah, they're going to do it inside the Alamo is the drop-off. So, you know, and Davey is able to sneak out of the trunk while Rice is in the Alamo going to make the switch. And he goes in there because he wants to, you know, he still wants to get the mission done. He wants to get that camera bag.
Right.
And, So he runs.
So they put it down, or they put the camera. Who does? Rice puts the camera on the drop off point, and let's see. Doesn't even before Davey grabs it? Don't they tell? Isn't somebody shouting to him that he forgot his camera bag? Or am I totally messing that up? Because what happens is Rice puts the camera bag down. The other guy's going to pick it up, and somebody's already yelling. Like somebody who works at the Alamo is yelling that he left his bag there, and isn't that when Davey picks it up?
Well, he does run over and grab it.
But nobody says that he left his bag there. Maybe I'm just
They do that after. In. They do at, just right after this part. But he runs into the old couple again.
Right.
And, you know, because he keeps running into this old couple. Davey grabbed the bag and starts running out, and then someone says, stop him. He stole the bag, and you know, we have an exchange at this point. Rice walks by, and the security guard is asking him, you know, for some reason, he just picks Rice of all people to ask him if that's his bag. I don't know. Did he remember him walking in with a camera bag? Possibly. But he's with the old couple, and she takes Davey out. You know, the old man stays there and says there's been a mix-up. You know, he sent the boy to get his bag. So, you know, you get a sense that there's someone here finally that as an adult that's going to help this kid out.
Yeah, right.
You know, not necessarily to believe probably everything that's going on, but he's got somebody on his side now.
Yeah, and you feel a little bit of relief there.
Yeah, because Eunice is her name. It's the MacReady's. She takes him to the car and says, don't worry, George will take care of it. And he does. He comes back to the car and he's got the bag. But, you know, then Davey's like, we grabbed the wrong one. And you're thinking, all right, the old people, they grabbed the wrong bag. And
then the old guy says, well, how do you know I picked the wrong one? And you're thinking, damn, not only are these old people on his side, they're freaking cool too.
Yeah, they believe that something's going on and they want to help this kid out, you know? So, as a kid watching this, you're like feeling good. You feel like he's got some breathing room and he's going to get some help here. And they want to know why this is so important. Like, why is it so important? You know, because the old guy just basically gave him his camera bag. He swapped camera bags with Rice. This is the part where he starts explaining to them. And this is the part that freaked me out as a kid. And even when I rewatched it again a few months back, not that I got all creeped out, but I got that feel. I remembered that feeling,
yeah,
that build up to this part, because she asks if he knows what these spies look like. And he doesn't, other than he overheard him saying that the person's missing two fingers. And, what did you think of this part?
Yeah, I'm the same way with you. Exactly the same. As a kid, I was kind of freaked out, kind of like putting your hands over your eyes, like, oh, man. And then this time, you're like, it's still a little gross, you know, seeing somebody pull out a hand with two fingers or three fingers on it. And so, yeah, and I was like, just like you, a little.
And you're shocked.
You're shocked.
It's creepy because as a kid, you know, a disfigurement like that, as a kid, you look at it differently, you know, as being scary or whatever. So as a kid, I'm like, oh my God. And then it realized that these are the spies. They're not helping them out.
Right. It was a great, I like how they revealed that. I think it was really, it was good writing for the movie, and they played the part perfect.
Yeah, they really did. They really did play that part quite well. And she kind of turns nasty.
Yeah, but in a very passive way, like a very calm way. And you're talking about the chloroform, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was cool how she's continuing to talk in a very calm way and then opens up the glove compartment, takes out some chloroform, takes out a rag, and Davey's watching the whole time going like, what is she doing? And all of a sudden, like Dor said, one fell swoop, bam, her hand is right in Davey's face with the chloroform, and he's out cold.
And the whole time she's doing it, like you said, just kind of nonchalantly getting it ready, but they're also talking about what their plan is. You know, they're saying how, for one, that they're really upset with Rice because they're looking at it as he screwed this thing up.
Yeah.
You know, but they're also talking that they're going to catch a plane at midnight and, you know, where they're going. And they use the chloroform on him, and he ends up waking up in the trunk again of Rice's car.
That's a major fail for Davey, man. He could have considered, that's game over. I think they could have killed him. He lost there. That was a major flub. He got real lucky not being dead.
Yeah. But he ends up in Rice's car because they basically, you know, George.
They don't want to kill him, right?
Well, I don't know if it's that. It's they don't, you know, I guess they look at it as not their problem. You know, that's Rice's problem. He needs to take care of it. And they made arrangements. George makes arrangements that Rice is going to take care of this problem. You know, they've got the tape now. They need to go and get to the airport. And so he wakes up in Rice's car again. You're just like, oh man, not again. You know, we got to go through this. And, you know, this is the part where we find how important the walkie-talkies are. I mean, they use the walkie-talkies a little out through the movie.
Yeah.
But again, Davey in the trunk. And Rice is talking to Alvarez and Haverman, and you know they want to know, do we need to go kill the girl? And he's got a garage door opener that's rigged up to her walkie-talkie that's got a bomb in it.
A major bomb.
And that's the other thing, you know, now looking at it, watching, I'm going, all right, as a spy, you want to take out half her block.
That's a huge block. You know? He calls it plastique, right?
Yeah, he's got enough plastique in there to take out like the whole neighborhood or something. I'm like, it just doesn't sound right for it's a spies. Little excessive. Yeah, exactly. But
it was needed for the end of the movie.
Right, yeah. So Flack can basically, he appears with Davy in the trunk again and it convinces him to take the car. And this is when we get a real fun car chase, I think, a foot race to start off.
It was very real. I really liked how bad of a driver they made Davy in this scene. Like, he drove like a kid, and, you know, he did. There's another thing Dorn mentioned. I wish he could have been here. He had to drive the car. He literally had to go down to the gas pedal, could not see. He lost complete visibility at that point, press the pedal, then jump back up so he could see out the windshield to drive, and he coasted the whole time. So he was never like pressing the gas and driving at the same and watching out the window at the same time. That's how big these cars were back then too. I mean,
it was a
freaking huge car. Yeah.
It was definitely a boat, and he doesn't want him shooting at his car.
At first
he's like, you know, he doesn't want him shooting at his car, but yeah, he's like grinding around corners and everything. So that was fun. You know what? There really wasn't a dull moment in this movie. This movie really does move along quite well, I think.
That's true. That is true. I did not have one bored part of the movie.
No, because I think even the slower parts, you get information, whether it's character development with his father at home, or just, you know, like, with Morris, it's got a real nice flow to this movie.
Yeah, it does.
It seems like, it goes pretty quick. Davy ends up crashing the car, though. You know, he
after scratching the hell out of it.
Well, after the Hollywood like exit from the parking ramp,
which I loved.
Yeah,
he launched the thing out of the parking garage.
Yeah, he did. And you know what's funny too is, unless it's a weird parking garage, did you notice it seemed like he was going up levels? To me, you have to rewatch
on the way out.
Well, as this whole chase thing was going, it seemed like he was going up levels.
Yeah, no, I've seen basement garages.
Yeah.
Garages, yeah.
All right,
it's not too weird.
We'll chalk it up as that then. As a basement.
New York City, man. That's not where he was, but that's where I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, and when he flies out, it's like Dukes of Hazzard or something like from Smoking the Bandit. He just comes flying out of there. And But he ends up crashing the car, and, you know, Jack's trying to tell him, let's go, we need to get out of here. But this is when he tries to call Kim on the walkie-talkie, but there's no answer. It's not working, basically.
Well, isn't this also the point where Jack is trying to convince Davy of something? To take the guys out, right?
Yeah, well, he's telling them that, you know, that they're running out of time, and that they're gonna have to, because I missed that point, but when Rice is telling them about the plastique in the bomb that he made, it's going to go off at midnight, so they're kind of on a time limit here. He can't get a hold of Kimmy and you see that kind of cuts to her on a bus bench, I think, and then you kind of hear the sound of a bomb in there. You kind of put two and two together that's, you know, it's in there. And so they get out of the car. He goes to a phone booth to call his dad at work. I think it's like, you know, it's his last ditch effort to try and get some help. And if, you know, so then I'm like, okay, his dad left him to go to work. And now I think it was like, I think they said I'm like 11:20 or 11:30. I'm like, was this kid expected to like make himself breakfast, lunch, and dinner and put himself to bed all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
But as he's in the phone booth, then, you know, they see him in the van, and that's when the headlights brighten up and they try to take him out in the phone booth.
And the dad, you could tell the point where the dad really decided he was gotta find his son was when Davy said he wasn't home. He said, I'm not home. Then that really perked up his dad's ears, and like, all right, something's wrong.
Right.
And I love when they did, and then when they crash into the phone booth and, you know, his dad, he lost a connection with his dad. I love his dad's reaction. I love how he throws that clipboard at the guy. It was like a perfect throw.
Yeah, and he's out of there. So, yeah, and that makes you feel good that a dad, you know, is going to go after son. I mean, obviously, it's late, and he just heard a disconnect from his son.
Yeah.
But this is when, you know, like you were talking about, he kind of convinces him because the van crashes, and he goes over there, and Haverman's dead, isn't he?
That's right. That's right. So he has access to the weapon.
To the weapon, but he doesn't want to take it.
Right.
He doesn't want to kill anybody. So the chase ensues, and they end up at the River Tours spot, I believe. Again, that's the same place that the River Tours was at.
Yeah, and why do they go back there?
Well, because Davey's trying to get to
the airport.
To the airport. So I'm just assuming that's just the way he's running.
I didn't like that. I thought that him going back there was a bad idea. Maybe I just didn't like it because it was so dark and there was a lot of dead ends and spaces where he could easily get killed.
Yeah.
And nobody would know. But, yeah, he did go back that way.
It must have been. That was the shortest route.
Guess so.
To get there.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
But things work out usually for him anyways. And I think this will be no different because, of course, Rice and Alvarez found him there. And again, time for the heavy artillery or something like that, right? And they have a briefcase. Oh, yeah. And, of course, they push everything off a table and you hear, like, glasses and stuff breaking, making all sorts of noise to put together this massive machine gun.
Yeah, and that was the only table with glasses on. They couldn't pick another clean table.
Yeah. So it,
yeah, and they put together a massive machine gun to kill Davey.
Yeah, to kill this little boy. But I think we have the idea now that Rice has just had enough.
Yep.
He's fed up with this. I mean, he's getting burned by a 12-year-old kid.
I know, and when he finally does catch him, I don't know. Are we up to that point yet?
Yeah, because we just go right there.
Because when Davey is trying to get away, Jack Flack does convince him. This is before the point where Rice catches up to him. Jack Flack does convince him to do this crazy maneuver to make Rice shoot Alvarez, which is, I don't think it was very smart. Like I said before when we were talking, I think Jack Flack should be fired for recommending that as a military maneuver to the kid. But it does work, and Rice ends up shooting Alvarez, trying to shoot Davey. So now Rice is even more pissed off.
Yeah, but he takes his advice and grabs a gun this time.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised because the whole time he was resisting, and I didn't think Jack Flack was going to convince him, but he did.
Yeah, well, I think he said, like, you know, you have to do this to save Kim.
Right.
Pretty much, you know, and so he's kind of playing on him that way, you know, not just the mission, but also, you know, you can save your friend too. We need to take him out, which he doesn't want to do. He still doesn't want to do it.
Right. But you're right. That is the point where he did pick up the gun.
Yeah.
And then Rice, go ahead.
Well, Rice basically gets him at a dead end, you know.
And I love... What did you call it? Posturing?
Yeah, like his monologue or whatever, talking to Davey.
I love that part because this is something, what Rice was saying is something you would expect one adult to say to another adult. You don't, what Rice was saying about, you know, shooting Davey's kneecaps is how it's going to hurt so bad. And then what does he do? Like going to pull out his guts or something?
Well, he wants to shoot him in the stomach. And then when he asks him to kill him or something, I mean, he's really getting graphic with this kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And still, Davey does not want to do anything. And he what happens is, you know, Jack Flack is there kind of with him. And he's telling him, like, to shoot him and everything. And so he's going to take it by himself. And he kind of goes off and telling Rice to shoot him, knowing Rice can't see him. But, you know, Davey keeps looking over at him, which I think pretty much freaks out Rice.
It does.
That maybe someone's there or whatever and just starts shooting at the wall. And,
that was enough thinking that Rice was killing Jack Flack. That was enough for Davey to shoot Rice.
Yeah.
With a perfect shot.
Perfect.
Got to give the kid credit there.
Yeah, one shot in the river. He's dead.
No evidence.
Yeah. And so they, well, I think they pull him out of the water. They talk about that later. But, you know, so Davey has a conversation with Jack Flack. He's not happy. He's not happy with him at all for what he did. He feels tricked. You know, and
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a big thing making your first kill, right? I would imagine.
I would think so. But yeah, he's mad at him for doing it, and this is when he breaks the toy, right?
Yeah, he crushes the Jack Flack figurine, and which is a major turning point, right? Because it kills Jack Flack because he doesn't want to play anymore. Doesn't want to play Cloak and Dagger anymore. So yeah, and you remarked about how you like how Jack Flack dies, right?
Yeah, because he gets shot. He even says, oh, he doesn't stop real bullets because he pulls his beret off, I think it was, to try to deflect the shots, mm-hmm. which you'll see in the beginning of the movie. He kind of does the same thing,
right,
and it
right.
works, but that's within the game. So as they're talking, he's like, you're shot, and he's like, no, I'm fine. And then the blood just starts to kind of, you can even hear it flowing out of his body, all these, bullet holes and everything. And,
right.
and essentially he passes. Davey doesn't need him anymore. He's mad at him, breaks the toy, and doesn't believe. Because he even says, right. doesn't Jack say, like, this is the hardest part of the rule?
Yeah, because he said the same thing happened with his dad, with Davey's dad, where the point where he doesn't want to play anymore is the most painful part.
Yeah, when they're a believer, they don't want to play anymore. Yeah. So, but hey, Davey's still got a mission to do, and he's got to get to the airport. And he's trying to get there. He finds some cab drivers. That's where I noticed the Louis Anderson cameo.
One line.
Total jerk to the kid. But he finds a cool cabbie to take him there. And he ends up getting to the hospital or to the airport where he's got to stop George and his wife from getting on the plane. And Kim's already there, right?
Yeah, and this is a great scene. This is a laugh out loud scene with Kim and like the head of security of the airport. She's like trying to get them to, I can't remember exactly what she's trying to get them to do, but they're taking a statement from her and she's getting all like frustrated with them. Like, why don't you just call them? Jeez. Like the way she's talking to these guys, I thought was classic. I loved that part.
Yeah, because, and Davey had warned her that one was missing fingers. And she's telling him, like, why don't you just check their fingers? I don't know. It's an old couple or something. She says, like, yeah. She was definitely giving him a hard time.
That was awesome.
About that. Davey ends up meeting up with her. And they end up getting to where the MacReadys are, getting ready to go on the plane. And so he pulls a good move here to stop him.
Yeah. Excellent move. They're about to get on the plane. They make it through the metal detector, and the kid tries. That's the point where Davey tries to run through, and he gets stopped by the guard, right?
Yeah.
And then he yells, "Mom, Dad, don't leave me!" And that's what gets the guard's attention to go grab the MacReadys.
Yeah, and then they kind of play on what I was thinking. They're a little old. A little old to be calling them Mom and Dad. I would have thought Grandma and Gramps, because they even say it through. Do we look like we have a kid that age? But right. They got us. They want to get this figured out. The security does, and they kind of know their numbers up at this point. And George gets hold of a gun and shoots a security or a policeman at that point. Davey's father and Kim's mom are at the airport at this point. And they take Davey onto the plane.
But before they do that, didn't his dad get news that there was a shooting at the Sunken Gardens there when there was a little boy involved? So he thought Davey was shot.
Yeah, they told him that that they had reports of I think they even say two men shooting at a boy Davey's age.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
So,
and then there's all this like commotion about a hijacking on a plane.
Yeah.
And that's where they go checking it out.
Yep. And Kim's mom ends up coming and, she gets to reunite with Kim, but, Davey is taken on the plane with the MacReadys. They want a pilot. They want to be flown out to, Mexico
Cuba.
Or was it Mexico or Cuba?
Cuba. Who wouldn't want to go to Cuba? So they need a pilot. And, the whole time Davey's trying to tell him that the walkie-talkie has a bomb in it. but he never gets out the full sentence, so they do not realize the urgency of what he's trying to say.
Yeah, they don't want to hear anything because, you know, at this point, they know the jig is up. They need to get out of there. They're not listening to that kid.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't believe him either if he said there was a, even if they let him finish his sentence, I still wouldn't believe him if they he said there was a bomb in the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right, they wouldn't. So they need a pilot. They need a pilot. And Davey's dad works for the Air Force, which we find out in the movie. So he knows how to taxi a plane. Doesn't know how to fly it. And they don't have a pilot there, I don't believe. Or if they wanted, I don't know if they wanted a certain pilot possibly to go out there. But he's got his uniform on, grabs a hat from somebody, and he goes out there to pilot the plane himself, knowing that he can't fly the plane. And the police are like, well, what are you going to do? And he's figure it out, right? So he goes on the plane and...
a pretty brave move.
Very brave move, but, you know, his kids... life's at risk, and that's what he tells them, you know, because they think they're bluffing. You know, I think that the police, the security, they think that the McCready's are bluffing, and they're like, they're bluffing with my kid's life. You know, I think any father would feel that way. You know, if there's something you could do to try and intervene with this, save your kid, that's what he does.
You know what? One thing in that part is, I even thought, even though his dad did go out there and be the pilot, he wasn't forceful enough. I think I would have just not even asked any. I would have grabbed the pilot's hat that was standing by the door and just walk out and walk to the plane. I wouldn't even consult the police. If that was me, I'm just picturing myself, because he was trying to like bargain. He was trying to convince them, let me go out there. I'm a pilot. Come on. What do you think? I would have been just like, I'm out there. Boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. But he did. He got out there. And he gets on the plane and, you know, so he starts taxiing. He tells him he's got to call on the radio for clearance to take off. And that's when he starts pretending he's calling, but it's really on the loudspeaker in the plane, right? And he says, tells him basically Davey Osborne, or this is Captain Jack Flack.
Mm-hmm. And it's Captain Jack Flack. Davey Osborne, please come to the cabin immediately, or something like that.
Yeah. And they don't need him. And he says, well, I have to make sure he's okay before we can take off. Believe this is when they do discover that there actually is a bomb in the walkie-talkie.
He just leaves it on the chair and she sees it. Well, you know, he opens it, tries to disarm it, and it's just sitting on the chair. So she does see it there. And there was, at that point, was there 30 seconds on it?
I don't remember the exact timing. It was getting, it was counting down.
Under a minute.
Yeah,
it was definitely under a minute.
It was pretty low. And his wife is calling for George. She's realizing they're in a situation now and doesn't care about the boy running off. And that's when Davey gets into the cockpit and his father gets him out of the plane through a side window.
I like that. I like how he did that. And I love when he finally lowers Davey out of the plane. He's like, you got to, as soon as you hit the ground, you got to get out of the way of the wheel or get out and roll. What did he say? Get out and run?
Yeah, basically get out of the way. And hit the ground, move.
I love that scene because the wheel almost did roll over him and it looked pretty real.
Yeah, and it was a touching scene because he doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to let his, you know, he doesn't want to let go of his father because, you know, the bomb's going to go off.
Right.
And he gets out of the way and the plane taxis on a little bit and sure enough, your favorite part of the movie happens.
The plane explodes. And that, it was a real good-looking explosion. Huge. You know, it probably did take up the fuel tanks of the plane. It was a big explosion. And then, you know, you see a shadow emerging from the explosion as Davey's, like, you know, sitting, 100 yards away from where it happened. And he's watching it. And you see a shadow come towards Davey with a beret. Looks like in the shape of a beret on. And Davey's thinking it's Jack Flack. And then, you know, as that figure gets closer to Davey, you find out that it's his dad at the very last minute with just, gosh, piss poor special effects at this point. I mean, why at this point sacrifice the movie? I'm not going to be too critical, but you know, it almost looked like they ran out of money at the end of the movie for this scene, because I could have done a better job in my my room, my living room, of doing this scene than they did. Basically, what happened is his dad was green screened over a graphic in the background of the explosion, but the frame rate of the explosion was like probably one frame per second or something like that. So you see this explosion going at like an unbelievably fake rate in the background, and it looked like somebody just took a regular light bulb lamp and pointed it at Davey's dad, and that was the lighting they had for the scene. It was just bad.
Well,
but aside from the bad special effects, you tell us the context and how touching it was.
That is the end of the movie. They reunite, and you know, he's happy, and his dad says Jack Flack never dies, and he says, "I don't need Jack Flack anymore." You know, it's definitely a touching moment. It really was. And to touch on your distaste for the special effects, I'll say as a kid, didn't notice it. You know, I think I was even probably thinking, as Davey was thinking, it was, you know, Jack Flack or whatever coming, but you knew it was his dad. As a father, I'm still not paying attention because I'm just going, oh man. It's his dad, you know, you're all happy. And so it really, I did notice it was bad, but it didn't bother me.
I liked it too. I was a little over the top there, but just watching from a technical perspective, it sucked. But everything else about it, like the theme and like the way they acted and everything, was really nice. It was really nice.
Yeah. And that's the end of the movie. That is the end of Cloak and Dagger. Like I said, I know we're a little picky on it a little bit. I probably was actually less than I thought I would be, but it is a great movie. It really is a great movie. I can't say any more than that. I mean, even though I pick on it, I truly do like this movie. Man, I will watch this movie. It's in my library. I told you, it's one of my movie audio rips. I have certain movies that I have that I rip the audio from. So when I'm at work, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but sometimes I get sick of listening to podcasts and I don't want to listen to music. Sometimes I'll put on a movie audio. I know it's kind of a geeky, dorky thing, but it's my thing. I like to do it. So this one's in the library with that.
That's cool. And I enjoy like picking on it just for fun, because it's they're just talking points, and I have fun, you know, sharing, seeing if anybody else noticed what I noticed and stuff. Well, yeah, same thing as you, man. I really enjoyed the movie, and you know, going through it again, watching it again, it was really, really cool to experience this again. And don't let the horrible special effects stop anybody from watching this if they haven't seen it. And if you did watch it again, man. I hope that listening to this show will make people want to watch it again.
Yeah, because I know guys that are my age that I work with. Some remember it by the name. Some never have seen it before. You know, I don't think it was a super popular movie, you know, on the same level as... You know, it's not on the same level as like Star Wars or something like that, or Indiana Jones, but it's definitely, I think, a popular movie. It's probably still amongst geeks, you know, which we fit in that category.
It was popular in my household, you know. There was that time when it was released on cable and it had a bunch of runs, and we taped it on VHS, and that was one of our go-to movies as kids, you know. Like, we had maybe 20 we just revolved through, and that was one of them, so...
Yeah, that's how it was for me. I mean, I didn't see this at the theaters. I saw it on HBO. I was lucky enough to have HBO as a kid. And so I had a tape of this. It's worn, but it's still around. My mom still has it. On the website, I have a photo section. I posted two pictures of it. It's just a bunch of stack of VHS tapes that... My mother's kept a lot of stuff. Unfortunately, a couple things that I wish she would have, she didn't, but, you know, I'm sure over the years she asked, you know, if I wanted the Atari 2600, and I'm sure in high school I was like, I don't want that thing, and she got rid of it. I have all the booklets for all the 2600 games we have. I don't have the games, I don't have the system, but I have all the booklets. So even that's, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I wish she still had my brother's Commodore 64, because I know he wouldn't want it, but I would definitely set it up somewhere.
You know, I never owned one of them, but I wanted one. I still want one. Never actually like owned one or learned anything on it, but I would still like to learn.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know much. You know, I basically used it to play games. I mean, my brother did a lot of stuff on it, but mostly games.
You know, that was a thing. My dad didn't want to buy it because we had a PC because he wanted, that was a work thing. He's like, the Commodore 64 is for games and a computer shouldn't be for that. So we ended up buying games for the PC. You can only play in four colors, and every game that came out for the Commodore 64 had 16 colors, and it just sucked. So I still want a Commodore 64. I'm still a little resentful.
Yeah, it was fun. I remember one of my buddies when I was younger, he had one. So he would bring his games over, and you know, and you could take the disc out and still play the game,
you know,
until you rebooted the Commodore. So you know, he'd be over and he was leaving. Like, all right, I think it was Skate or Die, maybe it was, that we'd play a lot. You know, I'd be like, well, before you leave, let's load up Skate or Die. And they would just sit there and play it and play it. But yeah, I wish I still had that stuff, but what are you gonna do? But it's kind of cool. Yeah, if you check out on the website, I have a picture section. Like I said, it's a new site. I'm still working on it. It's gonna take me a little bit of time with kids and work and all that stuff, but it definitely looks better than the original Blogger I had. I went to the blogger yesterday to put a post on there for anybody that had that bookmark to follow, and I was like, wow, Blogger looked horrible.
No, the WordPress site is sweet. I would just put a redirect from the Blogger to this site if you can. Don't even put anything on that site. Are you allowed to redirect from Blogger to this?
I think so. Well, I'm not. The only thing I did was I just made a post, and that was it, saying it's now at throwbackreviews.com. Go there.
Sweet.
Anything else on this movie, or there was actually something, there was something I was thinking I wanted to talk about, but I can't for the life of me remember it right now. So I'll kick myself later.
Okay.
While talking about it.
I'm good. I think we covered it well.
Yeah, that did go well. It was a good time. Before we do go, I would just like to say if you have iTunes, if you could leave us a review, preferably a good review, that'd be great. Get our ratings up, maybe get some more listeners that way. I started a Facebook. If you want to like it, I haven't had time to really do much with it, but I'll probably post some stuff on there occasionally as well. I think I can figure out how to do them on both. But check out the new website, throwbackreviews.com. It's looking good. If you have any ideas for movies that you'd want us to watch, or just any tips or anything, you can send us an email at showideas@throwbackreviews.com. So those are ways you can interact with the show. Steve, what about you? Anything you want to add?
Like a plug
for
myself? Well, these days I'm making electronic dance music, or just electronic music. So if you guys want to check out what I'm doing, go to tone40.com. That's T-O-N-E-40.com. And I'm starting to put stuff up there. I only got one song up now, but there should be much more coming on the way. And see if you like it. I kind of make music that, when I say electronic dance music, people go, I don't like that. Then they hear what I go do. They go, oh, I didn't know you meant that. So go check it out. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, it's very good. I've watched you do some live stuff. It's very good stuff, man. You should definitely check it out.
Thanks, dude.
Very good. And you said ctribio.com?
Tone40.com. Well, no, just go to tone40.com.
All right. Go there. And for me, you can go to sjdiner.com, find any of my links or anything like that. And I think that's going to be a wrap, man. Until next week, we're going to do Die Hard. So we're going to get a little more recent than our past movies, but still an 80s flick. So that should be fun. That's an exciting packed movie.
Just watched it a couple days ago, and I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I did too. You know, honestly, I never watched the movie full before. So this was the first time I've watched it from beginning to end, because on HBO, I would catch it here, catch it there. So I think I saw it all just in pieces.
Wow.
So this so it was kind of good to actually be able to sit and watch the entire movie. So I look forward to that episode. And hopefully Dor will be back with us that week.
Totally. We missed you, Dor.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I actually like watching movies for the show, because I watch them more closely. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's your homework, man. And you've been doing good.
Yes.
You're good about doing your homework. So, all right. Well, that's going to end this week's episode of Throwback Reviews. Until next time, thanks for listening. Thank you.